Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show that airs on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1185, I will have several segments. First, we will listen to the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, highlighting the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. I will then talk about the Israeli-American plan, or so-called peace plan, announced by President Trump, highlighting some of their plans for the occupied and destroyed Gaza Strip. We will listen to several commentaries and reactions to that plan from different sources and experts, as well as the reaction of the appointment of Tony Blair, former United Kingdom Prime Minister, known for the war crimes he committed in Iraq, something to become like the governor of Gaza, which I thought was interesting, because I never knew that Tony Blair was Palestinian. All along, I thought he was British. And to begin with, I never knew that Blair was chosen by the Palestinian people to govern them. That must have been done in a secret election or something like that. As we enter the third year of the ongoing non-stop 24/7 Israeli genocide, massacres, atrocities, war crimes, forced starvation, forced displacement, ethnic cleansing, and destruction of the Gaza Strip, where 2.3 million Palestinians live, with now hundreds of thousands killed and injured, including tens of thousands of children by apartheid Israel, the situation in the Gaza Strip continues to worsen by the second, as a direct result of the non-stop Israeli atrocities and war crimes. Let's listen to the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, highlighting the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza, presented by Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada.
This is the Electronic Intifada newscast. I'm Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 727 as we approach the third year of genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 429 Palestinians and injured more than 1,500 between September 24th and October 1st, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Israeli army has continued to intensify its attacks on northern Gaza, and Gaza City in particular. On September 27th, journalist Saleh al-Jafarawi documented Israeli helicopter gunships and drone artillery firing heavily in the north. In Gaza City on September 29th, reporter Hassan Salem captured Israeli airstrikes on several buildings in one residential block close to Al-Shifa Hospital. The Mecca residential tower in western Gaza City was bombed by the Israeli army also on September 29th. Journalist Khamis Al-Rafi captured the explosion on video. James Elder, the spokesperson for the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, recorded himself at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in central Gaza on September 26th, as children poured into the emergency room with injuries from Israeli quadcopter fire.
This is just absolutely out of control. I promised myself the first story about being back in Gaza would be just some of the incredible volunteers and the joy they're bringing to kids, even in hospitals, and I'm here. And the first room I'm in, there are four children who have all been hit by quadcopters, four children. And then we're in a makeshift ICU, a makeshift intensive care, because there are so many children. And all four of these children have been hit by quadcopters. 2 minutes later in the ICU, sitting with this little girl, Aya, who is 5 years old, and she died in front of us. Then there's a little girl, Sham, who just got raced in here. Sham has just been raced in here. She's been pulled out under the rubble, but they can't find her mum, and her sister has died. And then there's this little guy, Barra. Barra's got shrapnel in his neck. I mean, I can feel Barra's feet, mate. Barra's cold. Barra's in a critical condition, as was a little boy just over here on the floor who'd been shot. He was lying in his own blood for 5 hours in the corridor. Finally, when doctors found space for him on a bed, as soon as he left the corridor, another wounded child went onto the floor. And this little boy who was bleeding, his mother was just screaming to him, saying, "Who around the world allows this to happen? Who around the world allows this to happen?" She asked and she asked.
Also in central Gaza, the UN Human Rights Office documented the killing of nearly 90 Palestinians in at least 12 separate Israeli attacks in Nuseirat and Al-Zuweida areas over 5 days between September 24th and 28th. Those attacks include strikes on the tents of displaced families, residential units, and inside refugee camps. In addition, the UN says the Israeli military has reportedly launched airstrikes from drones, as well as fired artillery and live gunfire, quote, against those gathering firewood, especially in northern central Gaza, causing dozens of casualties. Israel has completely blocked the entry of cooking gas since March 2, 2025, forcing people to rely on wood, mostly derived from flammable debris from destroyed buildings and broken furniture, as the only available source of fuel for cooking. As part of Israel's stated and open intention to expel all Palestinians from Gaza City and elsewhere in the north, the Israeli army has closed Al-Rashid Street, the main north-south artery along the coast for traffic going in and out of Gaza City. Israeli War Minister Israel Katz boasted that Gaza is now formally divided into north and south, and the closure is intended, quote, to tighten the encirclement around Gaza City, requiring anyone who leaves southward to pass through Israeli army checkpoints. Katz added that this is, quote, the last opportunity for residents of Gaza City to move south, further threatening that, quote, those who remain in Gaza will be considered terrorists and terror supporters. The Gaza government media office stated that this arbitrary measure, quote, falls within the framework of the occupation's ongoing policy of oppression, blockade, and genocide against our Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. Israel continues to bomb hospitals and the areas surrounding them. On September 30th, reporter Saad Hezbollah filmed the Israeli army firing gas bombs near Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. At least 11 unidentified Palestinians were buried in a mass grave inside the hospital's grounds on the same day. Photojournalist Mahmoud Aliwa filmed workers transporting the bodies and burying them inside a large gravesite next to the hospital as drones buzzed overhead. Israel bombed the grounds of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital on Wednesday for the 15th time, according to the Gaza government media office, which said that Israel targeted, quote, a group of displaced citizens within the walls of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in the central Gaza Strip. Two people had come to the hospital for treatment and were subjected to bombing near the new internal medicine department. This criminal bombing, the media office added, resulted in serious injuries and extensive material damage and posed a direct threat to the lives of dozens of patients inside the hospital. It also endangered the lives of more than 70 journalists and media professionals, as the bombing occurred just meters away from them while they were covering the events and developments of genocide, aggression, and forced displacement. Israel bombed Al-Helu International Hospital in Gaza City on September 28th. Ismail Al-Tawabta, the director of the Health Ministry's media office, told the Anadolu news agency that the Israeli army shelled the hospital with two missiles, making the entry to or exit from the hospital impossible. Quote, doctors and patients inside the hospital are living in a state of terror and severe fear, which has been worsened by the occupation's deliberate cutoff of the hospital's internet network to isolate it from the outside world and suspend medical services for civilians, the Webta said. People recovering from complex orthopedic surgeries were captured on video evacuating the hospital in wheelchairs. The Samir Project, a mutual aid organization in Gaza, filmed people after they were forced out of the hospital by the Israeli army amid quadcopter fire, shelling, and sniper attacks. One man says that there is no place for him to go and that the Israeli military vehicles kept advancing toward the hospital. Israel continued to attack rescue crews this week. On September 30th, in Al Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City, Mahmoud Basal, the spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense, said that Israeli forces directly targeted their staff with a drone while they were on a humanitarian rescue mission at Al Falah School, where displaced families had been sheltering. Seven civil defense personnel were injured, and rescue worker Mundar Rahed al-Dahshan was killed. Basal said that more than 30 members of the civil defense have been killed in the last 2 years. Quote, "The person you see in this shroud is a human being," Basal said, "who has the right to live, who has the right to get married, who has the right to live like any other human being in the world. But the occupation has deprived him of the most basic right in existence, which is the right to live. We will continue this humanitarian service because it is truly humanitarian to serve our people." On September 29th, a nurse at Nasser Medical Complex, Marwan Abdin, was shot in the head as he stood in the doorway of a room inside the hospital. Journalist Hussein Kharis filmed this clip.
Yes, he's one of our medical staff. He was shot inside the complex, as you can see. It's now. He's in very critical situation. I think he's going to pass away. Oh my God.
Another attack on medical services injured paramedic Omar Abdu al-Maza on September 29th, while he and rescue crews were working to evacuate wounded people from under the rubble of a house in western Gaza City, and the Israeli army bombed the same area again. The home belonged to family members of the Hasira clan, who were targeted along with other local families after Israel's Shin Bet intelligence agency began pressuring them to cooperate with its operations in Gaza. Community elders were reportedly asked to form local armed groups, manage and police aid distribution, fight Hamas, and pass intelligence to Israel, according to Israeli and regional news outlets. The families had refused such demands and say that they knew reprisals against them would happen. Euromed Human Rights Monitor says that it gathered testimonies by families who were, quote, forced to choose between remaining under siege and bombardment with no shelter, food, or medicine, and forced displacement into unknown conditions lacking basic life necessities, all under explicit threats of death if they refused Israeli orders. These testimonies, Euromed adds, show a deliberate policy to break civilian will by using fear and destruction as instruments of subjugation. This is a dangerous policy of extortion by Israeli forces against families in the Gaza Strip, the rights group says. Quote, "What began as individual extortion has escalated into a systematic, collective practice aimed at dismantling Palestinian social fabric by forcing people to betray their communities and subordinating survivors to survival conditions that destroy communal identity and resilience. The pressure has shifted from targeting individuals to organized collective extortion that places entire families before a horrific equation. Join militias created by Israel or face persecution, mass killing, starvation, and forced expulsion. A coordinated attempt to eliminate Palestinian society or reduce it to submission under occupation control." One massacre, Euromed states, carried out on September 27th against the Bakr family in the Beach refugee camp that killed 9 family members, including children, quote, occurred one day after the family refused an Israeli demand to remain in place on the condition that its members form and serve in a local militia aligned with the army, similar to the Abu Shabab gang established east of Rafah. Euromed Monitor's field team reported that Israeli forces have begun forming similar groups in multiple other areas of Gaza, including South Khan Yunis, East Shujaiya, and Beit Lahia in the north. Starvation is continuing to kill Palestinians across Gaza. On Wednesday, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza said that it had recorded two more deaths due to malnutrition, including a child, over a 24-hour period, bringing the total recorded number of starvation deaths to 455, including 151 children. And local infrastructure agencies in Gaza say that Israeli attacks are further depriving Palestinians of clean water. Al Jazeera's Ibrahim Al-Khalili reported that more than 75% of Gaza's central water wells are out of service because of Israeli attacks. And the Electronic Intifada's contributor, Asim Al-Nabih of the Gaza municipality, told Al Jazeera that people are getting less than a quarter of their daily water needs. Israel killed at least three more journalists in Gaza this week. On Saturday, the Gaza government media office confirmed that Mohammed Al-Daya of the Palestinian Media Center was killed. The media office also confirmed that Sami Daoud, who worked as a reporter for Rawafa TV, was killed on Tuesday. Also on Tuesday, in Deir al-Balah, photographer Yahya Barzak was killed in an Israeli airstrike. He was a contributor to different media outlets and was a skilled and beloved portrait photographer of newborn babies before the genocide began. With these deaths, Israel has killed at least 254 reporters and media workers since October 2023. On Wednesday evening and into Thursday, in international waters where Israel has no jurisdiction, Israeli naval ships blocked, arrested, and kidnapped hundreds of activists aboard the Gaza Samud flotilla. Some were attacked by Israeli water cannons as they tried to evade Israeli naval hijackings and continued toward Gaza's shores. As of airtime, all 44 boats were blocked and hijacked. The flotilla intended to break the criminal siege on Gaza and had been sailing from southern Europe carrying food, water, medicine, diapers, baby formula, and other essential supplies that Israel has blockaded from Gaza as part of its genocide. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition stated on social media that, quote, Israel has attacked the global Samud flotilla in international waters. People of conscience have been abducted. The flotilla broke no laws. What is illegal is Israel's genocide, Israel's illegal blockade of Gaza, and Israel's use of starvation as a weapon. Unarmed people of conscience abducted in international waters. This is piracy. This is kidnapping, the coalition stated. Footage from the Anas al-Sharif boat, which was hijacked by Israeli soldiers early Thursday morning and was named after the Al Jazeera journalist who was assassinated by Israel in August, shows Israeli soldiers taking over the boat and disabling the live camera feed. Earlier on Wednesday, just days after it announced that it was accompanying the flotilla with a naval ship, the Spanish government withdrew and turned back, saying that it had respect for the humanitarian mission, but that it urged the flotilla to avoid confrontation with Israel. Italy had also sent a ship to escort the flotilla as well, but it turned back earlier in the week. Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, who was aboard one of the first boats to be intercepted, the Alma, recorded this clip just before Israeli soldiers boarded the boat and abducted everyone aboard.
My name is Greta Thunberg and I'm currently on board the boat Alma as part of the Global Samud Flotilla, a peaceful humanitarian mission to deliver aid to the civilian population of Gaza and to break Israel's illegal and inhumane siege. And it is likely to believe that we will be intercepted tonight by Israel, which would be a blatant violation of humanitarian and maritime law. Israel is not immune to international law. They must be held accountable for their war crimes. Stop the genocide, stop the occupation, and free Palestine.
We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Nightmares Asleep, Nightmares Awake by Ali Skake, writing from Gaza. Ali writes about Israel's bombing of the Al-Jundi Al-Majhul tower in Gaza City a few weeks ago, which was adjacent to where he lived. The bombing, he says, turned the night crimson, streaked with a dim white light. After the bombing, Ali says he went back to his apartment, which he and his family began renting in 2024 after returning to Gaza City from the south. Quote, "It was unrecognizable when we entered. Everything bore the marks of the nearby shelling. Shattered glass littered every corner. Wooden doors had been ripped from their frames, some splintered into pieces, while aluminum window frames had been reduced to fragments. The sofas were half torn, the fridge was split into four, the washing machine had been rendered useless, the sink was smashed, and the sewage system was completely destroyed. Two of the four solar panels lay broken on the floor. Most of my university books, which I had left on the balcony, were torn apart. Even my mattress was ripped in half. Still, we returned to the apartment to clean and to repair what we could. When night fell, I laid my head on the pillow, trying to find sleep. But almost every night, once my eyelids began to close, nightmares strike like sudden flashbacks. I see myself running through blazing red flames, thick gray dust clouding my vision. I'm carrying too much, and things keep falling from my hands. Crowds surround me in a distant circle, silent, unreachable. The only sound is relentless bombing. I feel lost. I search for someone to help. I wake up sweating, my breathing rapid, my heart racing. I realize it is just a nightmare. This, a horror Israel has inflicted on me in my sleep. There is no relief in waking up, however. Israel has inflicted a real nightmare on me and everyone in Gaza City when it ordered us to evacuate to the south. Maybe the south is less dangerous than the north, but it is not a safe zone, as they claim. What's more, there is not enough space for all the people of Gaza. Dangerous or less dangerous, we are all destined to die one day. My family and I decided not to go south. If death must come, it can find us in Gaza City, the place where we were raised and where we took our first breaths and our first steps, the place where we became who we are." Those are excerpts from Nightmares Asleep, Nightmares Awake by Ali Skeik, an English student and a writer in Gaza, on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. We go back to the Global Samud Flotilla to Gaza, where activists on one of the boats sang a version of the anti-fascist Italian song Bella Ciao just before the boat was hijacked by Israeli soldiers in international waters.
Viva Palestina! Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Ciao, Ciao! Viva, viva Palestina! We'll be free from the river to the sea.
And just a few miles away, on the shores of Palestine's Gaza Strip, musician Mohanned Abu Qamar and his friends sang for the honor and freedom of the people on the flotilla and in Palestine.
اشهد يا عالم عسطول الحرية شرفاء الكرة الأرضية انقضوا لغزة ما خافوا من الموت لا يصدح صوت الحرية اشهد يا عالم عسطول الحرية شرفاء الكرة الأرضية انقضوا لغزة ما خافوا من الموت لا يصدح صوت الحرية.
And finally, Italian union workers and activists who promised to shut down the country once again in a general strike if the flotilla was impeded began their mass protests and strikes on Wednesday evening. Giovani Palestinesi d'Italia, the Palestinian Youth of Italy movement, uploaded this video from Rome on Wednesday evening. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the U.S. and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. So there has been a lot of talk over the past few days about the so-called 20-point peace plan announced by President Trump regarding the Gaza Strip, a plan that many experts call nothing but a continuation of the imperialist colonial project in Palestine and a repackaging of the ongoing Israeli genocide and slaughter of the Palestinians. A peace plan that does not even mention a future Palestinian state. A peace plan that does not even let Palestinians govern themselves. A peace plan that does not even allow Palestinians to choose their destiny. A peace plan that does not force Israel to completely withdraw from all the land that it occupied by force. Well, let me share with you a good explanation of what this so-called peace plan is by Ava Wariner with Middle East Eye.
You are the greatest friend that Israel has ever had in the White House.
Israel's lucky to have him.
In Washington, it was all backslaps and celebratory remarks.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Trump hailing a historic peace plan for Gaza, Netanyahu calling him Israel's greatest ally. They were full of praise for each other and for the ceasefire plan.
This is a big, big day, a beautiful day, potentially one of the great days ever in civilization.
A deal that would end the war in Gaza, free Israeli hostages, and put Trump in charge of something he calls the Board of Peace, which would see him personally oversee Gaza's reconstruction.
I want to thank Bibi for really getting in there and doing a job.
But what is there to celebrate?
The plan offers the Palestinians a choice between either a colonial apartheid occupation at best or the continuation and the completion of the genocide at worst.
The deal strips Palestinians of power over their weapons, over their government, and even over their own leaders, with no equivalent limits on Israel, whose forces would remain in place until those conditions are met. And while Trump promises a new chapter of peace, Netanyahu makes it clear, if Palestinians don't agree to these terms, the war goes on.
If Hamas rejects your plan, Mr. President, then Israel will finish the job.
It will pay in hell if they don't sign it.
Here's a quick look at what's inside the 20-point plan and what it actually means. Within 72 hours of the deal being accepted, all Israeli hostages, alive and dead, would be returned. In exchange, Israel would release Palestinian prisoners. Aid would begin flowing immediately, and Israel's forces would withdraw, but only in stages, tied to milestones like the decommissioning of Hamas's weapons. Now, to cut through what that actually means, I spoke to Nima Soltani, a Palestinian author and a reader in public law.
To ask the Palestinian now to demilitarize, while on the other hand, the Israeli state and Israeli ruling elites who are accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity in the International Criminal Court, they are not asked to demilitarize. Again, this shows how lopsided, how one-sided, how unfair, and how this agreement flouts the requirements of international law.
The plan outlines that Gaza would be run by a temporary technocratic committee, supervised by an international body, the so-called Board of Peace, chaired personally by Donald Trump, with Tony Blair among its members. Crucially, Palestinians themselves are largely excluded from running this administration. Instead, key positions are to be held by Egyptians and Israeli officials.
Clearly, when you have a supervisory board that is called the Board of Peace, but in fact, it's a board of control. It's an attempt to control the Palestinians by preventing them from changing the status quo.
So for Palestinians, the fine print reads more like surrender terms. Hamas and other factions banned from politics, foreign forces deployed inside Gaza, Palestinians vetted before they can even join the police, and splitting Gaza from the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. And the plan also places strict conditions on the Palestinian Authority. Netanyahu has highlighted reforms, including stopping incitement in the media and ending lawfare against Israel at the ICC and ICJ. One tweet pointed out that this means Palestinians can't criticize Israel in the media or hold them accountable under international law. And even with all those conditions piled onto Palestinians, Netanyahu has already watered down key promises. He also has made it so clear that Israel's military isn't going anywhere. So while Trump promises a new chapter of peace, Netanyahu's red lines suggest something else. And inside of Israel, there's doubt the plan will even be implemented because many don't trust Netanyahu not to break it to keep himself in power. And so we have applause in Washington, doubts in Tel Aviv, and in Gaza, a future still dependent on whether Hamas signs a deal that asks them to give up everything. For a peace that many fear is slipping even further away.
That was Eva Wariner at MiddleEastEye.net. Soumaya Ghannouchi, a British Tunisian writer and expert in Middle East politics, shared her opinion on Trump's plan with Middle East Eye, calling it colonial arrogance dressed as peace. Let's take a listen.
What Trump unveiled in Washington was not a peace plan. It was a parody, a deal proclaimed as a breakthrough, negotiated between an American enabler and an Israeli perpetrator, with the very people whose fate it decides erased from the stage. Trump sat beaming beside Netanyahu, thanking him for agreeing to a plan Netanyahu had written himself. And the Palestinians? Nowhere. Not Hamas, not even the Palestinian Authority, not even a token figure to lend the charade a shred of credibility. This is not diplomacy. This is colonial arrogance dressed in the language of peace. It's the same logic that birthed the Abraham Accords. Strike deals over Palestine without Palestinians. Celebrate peace while ignoring the occupation. Call it reconciliation while you blockade, starve, and bomb a people into silence. But let's be clear, this is not negotiation. It is imposition. It is surrender dressed up as statesmanship. Netanyahu knows how to kill negotiations, assassinate negotiators, from Ismail Haniyeh to those bombed in Doha as they sat to discuss Trump's draft. Eliminate the talks, eliminate the negotiators, then stand in Washington to announce a plan written by genocide partners. And to dignify the circus, a host of Arab and Muslim leaders summoned, not to defend Palestinians, but to pressurize them. Whether they know it or not, their role is not protection, it is cover. Not to shield Palestine, but to shove it towards submission. Netanyahu himself crowed in astonishment. Who could believe it? That Muslim and Arab regimes would provide the fig leaf for Israel's diktat. Strip away the theater and what's left? Thin gruel. One concrete item, the return of hostages. Everything else, smoke. No guarantees of withdrawal, no binding commitments, just vague promises while Israeli troops remain entrenched. What Trump gave Netanyahu was not compromise, but victory. The very victory he failed to achieve by force after 2 years of bombs, massacres, and impunity. Israel failed to crush Gaza. It failed to bring its hostages home by war. It failed to break Palestinian will. Trump's deal is an attempt to turn defeat into triumph, to conjure through the veneer of diplomacy what could not be won on the battlefield. But Israel is not triumphant. It is isolated. At the UN, 77 delegations walked out as Netanyahu spoke, leaving him to preach to empty chairs. Across Europe and the US, poll after poll shows public opinion tilting decisively against Israel, with younger generations leading the revolt. That is the true aim of this deal, to break that tide, to smother boycotts, to suffocate protests, to silence a rising global conscience, and in its place, a colonial guardianship, a so-called peace council chaired by Donald Trump and overseen by Tony Blair. Yes, Tony Blair, the man whose colonial delusions and blood-soaked record in Iraq disqualify him from running a playground of the Middle East, let alone Gaza. This is not peace. It is the Gaza Humanitarian or Humiliation Foundation, expanded and repackaged, the same machinery of domination and repression dressed up in flowery human jargon. And the rulers who sit beside Netanyahu, from the Emiratis who whispered with him as the world turned away at the UN to those paraded behind Trump's podium, are not partners in peace, they're accomplices in subjugation. As Egypt's former UN delegate Mu'taz Khalil put it, this is a plan of surrender. It silences Palestinians. It strips them of representation. It hands Netanyahu the absolute victory he promised and failed to win. History will not be kind to this moment. A ceasefire plan that excludes the occupied is not a peace plan. It is a colonial diktat, the language of mandate and tutelage revived for the 21st century. It is the same conceit that promised away Palestinians' homes and villages in their absence without their consent in the Balfour Declaration of 1917. Then from London, today from Washington, mandates, protectorates, trusteeships, all the euphemisms of empire recycled to deny a people their voice. But here's the truth. Palestine cannot be written off. Gaza cannot be negotiated away. It lives in the conscience of the world, and that conscience is rising. Trump and Netanyahu can draft as many plans as they please, but outside their conference rooms, the world is shifting. Millions march, boycotts deepen, public opinion tilts, the tide is turning, and no paper agreement can stem it. Palestine has become the conscience of the world, and that cannot be negotiated away.
That was Soumaya Ghannouchi, a British-Tunisian writer and expert in Middle East politics, with an opinion to Middle East Eye on Trump's so-called peace plan. Diana Boutou, a Palestinian human rights attorney, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization, whom I've interviewed on this program before, spoke with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez at Democracy Now! On Trump's plan, describing it as repackaging of genocide. Let's listen to a portion of that interview.
During a White House meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, President Trump unveiled a 20-point plan to end Israel's war on Gaza, free Israeli hostages, and remove Hamas from power. On Monday, Netanyahu expressed support for the deal, but he's already backed away from key elements. Hamas has not responded yet to the deal. The Palestinian Authority and several Arab countries have expressed support for Trump's proposal. As part of his 20-point peace plan, Trump announced the establishment of an international transitional governing body.
After the success of this effort, my plan calls for the creation of a new international oversight body, the Board of Peace, we call it, the Board of Peace, sort of a beautiful name, the Board of Peace, which will be headed not at my request, believe me, I'm very busy, but we have to make sure this works. The leaders of the Arab world and Israel and everybody involved asked me to do this, so it would be headed by a gentleman known as President Donald J. Trump of the United States. And we're going to put leaders from other countries on and leaders that are very distinguished leaders, and we'll have a board, and one of the people that wants to be on the board is the UK former Prime Minister Tony Blair. Good man, very good man. Hamas and other terrorist factions will play no role in the board, but they'll play no role in the governance of Gaza at all, directly or indirectly.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke after President Trump.
I support your plan to end the war in Gaza, which achieves our war aims. It will bring back to Israel all our hostages, dismantle Hamas's military capabilities, end its political rule, and ensure that Gaza never again poses a threat to Israel.
Trump's plan outlines steps that could lead to a, quote, credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood, unquote. But after the meeting, Netanyahu said he would, quote, forcibly resist, unquote, Palestinian statehood. Netanyahu has also rejected the plan's call for Israel to eventually pull its troops fully out of Gaza. The two men ultimately refused to take questions after their joint statements yesterday at the White House. We're joined right now by Diana Boutou, a Palestinian human rights attorney, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization, speaking to us from Ramallah. Thanks so much for being with us, Diana. Can you respond to what has been put forward and President Trump being the head of this, what they're calling a board of peace, with Tony Blair, one of the key players in this, the former British Prime Minister?
Well, this plan that has been put forward is certainly not a plan that is going to end the genocide. What they're simply attempting to do is repackage it. And the reason that I say this is that what Israel wants is to be able to get the Israelis back, but there is no guarantee whatsoever that they're going to stop the killing of Palestinians in any way, shape, or form. Instead, what we see is that this is a plan in which Israel will continue to have the ability to continue to attack Palestinians, to continue to take over Palestinian land, to continue to attack Palestinian hospitals, schools, and so on, with absolutely no oversight and no accountability internationally or otherwise. And the idea that this is being called a peace plan is not only a farce, but is an insult to anybody who actually believes in peace.
And Diana, the proposals talk about the creation of an international stabilization force that would take over from the Israeli military the security of Gaza, but no clear sense of how this force would be created and the United States would apparently control it. Could you talk about that as well?
Yes, certainly. This plan is actually very, very, very vague. And one of the things that comes out of it is that, to me, it looks as though it's an Israeli plan that has been repackaged as being an American plan. And I say this because there were no Palestinians who were consulted in the creation of this plan. In fact, it was just Trump who discussed it with Arab leaders and then Trump discussing it with Netanyahu. He didn't meet with the Palestinian president. In fact, he didn't even allow him to travel to the United States for the UN General Assembly meeting. And so there's nothing in there where there's any form of Palestinian agency. So they talk about some sort of international force, but it's not at all clear. But more than that, when they're talking about the plan calls for the Israelis to withdraw in stages. But again, at no point is there any guarantee that the Israelis will actually withdraw. All of the guarantees that are mentioned in this document are guarantees that are given to Israel. There's not a single guarantee that is given to Palestinians. So once again, rather than this being a document that is leading to the end of Israel's genocide, it's actually just a repackaging of it. And so this is my fear, is that everybody wants to see an end to this genocide. And this is why you see so many people who have said that they welcome this plan. But the part two of this plan is the part where it is terrifying, where we're going to see that rather than there being Palestinian agency, instead, the very people who have carried out this genocide, the very people who have funded this genocide, are going to be the ones who are going to be in charge of Palestinian lives. And that's America and, also, and the United States. America
also
and Israel.
The proposal supposedly recognizes, quote, the aspirations of the Palestinian people for their own independent state. But as it's been made clear by Netanyahu, he will oppose that. So how do you accept the plan, but at the same time reject the key aspect of what the entire struggle of the Palestinian people has been for?
This is why this is an Israeli proposal that has just been repackaged as into an American one. And so he's made it clear that he never wants to see a Palestinian state. He's said this for decades. I just don't know why people don't believe him. And now he's said it very clearly. And the Americans have also said it very clearly that they're not going to see a Palestinian state either. Once again, what we're seeing is that the Americans and the Israelis, the two parties that have been involved in carrying out this genocide, are going to be the people who are going to rule over the lives of the people over whom they've committed this genocide. And that is a recipe for disaster. I don't know why this is where the world has allowed this to stand. Why is it that Palestinians have been forced to negotiate an end to their genocide? This doesn't make any sense.
Can you talk about the role of the Arab countries, the Gulf countries? You have Netanyahu, apparently, with President Trump calling the prime minister of Qatar and apologizing for bombing Doha, for violating its sovereignty and killing, well, there were something like six people killed, but apologizing for killing the Qatari security officer. And then Trump now announcing that there's a deal being made between Israel, Qatar and the United States, what that is. And of course, it's in Qatar where the Hamas officials apparently are going to weigh, apparently as early as today, this deal. The last time they were weighing a U.S. deal, Israel bombed them, though didn't kill the major figures there.
Yes. So this apology was hardly an apology. The fact that it took President Trump to get Netanyahu to make a half-hearted apology. And I think that one of the reasons that Netanyahu didn't take any questions yesterday was because he didn't want to answer the question of whether he indeed apologized to Qatar. But it's not just a question of an apology. This isn't the first time that Israel has violated the territorial integrity of a country. Israel has been bombing Lebanon. It's been bombing Syria. It has been bombing Yemen. It has been bombing Tunisia. And it's been bombing Iran and, of course, Qatar as well. And so the fact that Israel's been allowed to get away with it is the part that is the most disturbing. This is the whole point of the international legal system, is that there should be methods to hold Israel to account. But once again, we see that the United States is giving cover to Israel. And this time, it's not just giving cover to it, but you see that it's giving cover to it in such a way that it's just simply an apology and that's it.
That was a portion of the interview Democracy Now! Conducted with Diana Bhutu on Trump's so-called peace plan. Dr. Ramzi Baroud, Palestinian author, journalist, and editor-in-chief at the Palestine Chronicle, said this about the appointment of Tony Blair to govern Gaza.
This must be the joke of the century. Tony Blair, the biggest loser in the history of European politics, is being readied to become, in a way, kind of the governor of Gaza, similar to the governor of Iraq after the invasion of that country in 2003. Well, we know what happened back then. But he's going to be, supposedly, the governor of Gaza operating from Egypt. This is kind of like more or less what the leaks and the newspapers are talking about. Tony Blair. I mean, Israel is that desperate. The Americans are that desperate. The Arabs are that desperate that they call for Tony Blair. This is, remember, Bush's poodle? This is the guy who went to Iraq and, you know, with so much enthusiasm based on total and utter lies and ended up destroying the country and killing millions of innocent people and setting the stage for the biggest disaster in the Middle East, the consequences of which are still being felt until today. That very Tony Blair, the very Tony Blair that they put as the head of the so-called quartet for peace that were supposed to bring the Israelis and the Palestinians together on the negotiations table, but ended up doing nothing but also serving as Israel's poodle. That's what he does. He is someone's poodle. And you are bringing him to break Gaza. Gaza, that the Israeli military could not, over the course of 2 years, achieve anything of strategic value in Gaza. It's Tony Blair. He's going to come to Gaza and he's going to govern Gaza and he's going to fix everything for Israel. I mean, it is so funny, yet it's so tragic at the same time that I feel like I want to laugh, but I can't. Tony Blair is going to be the man who is going to be entrusted by the Arabs. The Arabs have no ability to take initiative of their own, to come to the aid of their brethren, to provide them with food and to stand as a line of defense against Israel. So they are entrusting Tony Blair. Well, I mean, the positive thing about all of this is just it really shows how desperate Israel and its allies are and what a strong position the Palestinians are in despite of the horrific losses of our families and our loved ones in Gaza. But the fact is the world is changing and it's changing fast. And Israel and its allies are on the defensive and they are so bankrupt that they are asking Tony Blair to come to the rescue. How strange and funny and bewildering this whole thing is.
Medea Benjamin, political activist and co-founder of Code Pink, spoke with Jossi Golbo, a former U.S. intelligence officer and anti-war activist, about the plan. Let's take a listen.
Josie, you were in the military, an intelligence officer. How do you look at this peace plan that was just introduced by Netanyahu and Trump?
Yeah, so recently we were able to review the details of the 20-point plan that Trump introduced. And supposedly he said this was in collaboration with all of the Arab countries and that they had agreement with the Arab countries. But in my view, this looks like a plan that's only going to end up leading to the Palestinian people suffering more. There's not going to be any justice for what has happened to them for this genocide. It seems like they just want to sweep everything that we've witnessed under the rug in the past 2 years and move forward with not actually acknowledging the root issue of what exists here, which is that Israel's an apartheid state.
And what about this idea that there's this board of peace that's going to be involved, I guess, in the reconstruction of Gaza, and it's headed by Trump, and it's Tony Blair is part of it.
Well, that was an interesting, I actually thought that that was coming from The Onion. I thought that that was a joke. But no, it is the reality. And if your audience doesn't know who Tony Blair is, he's someone that I, learning more about what I was involved in with the invasion of Iraq, learn about how much Tony Blair's influence into invading Iraq was. And we lost 4,500 people in Iraq, American brothers and sisters, because of a decision that he helped influence, which was totally wrong. And he has publicly apologized for that, for the 2.5 million Iraqis that have been killed, for the Americans that have been killed. And now we're going to get this guy. How could that be the right choice?
So what's your advice for people who want to see justice for Palestinians?
What I'm going to say is, even if we see the relentless bombing stop, we cannot stop. We cannot stop until justice is served. We cannot stop until Palestinians have human rights, human dignity, and to be able to live, to be able to have a child that is safe, that is fed, that has a right to live. We cannot stop fighting for Palestine until justice is served and Bibi is at The Hague.
You heard it from Josie, our intelligence officer.
That was Medea Benjamin and Josie Gilbo. Speaking of Medea Benjamin, I'm going to share with you now portions of her talk during CARE's 2025 annual banquet. That's the Council on American Islamic Relations banquet. Medea Benjamin is a peace activist, author, and co-founder of Code Pink, Women for Peace and Global Exchange, known for her fearless advocacy for human rights on Capitol Hill and beyond.
I know that we are all feeling an incredible heartbreak every day that we get up and we say, is this genocide still going on? And indeed it is. I can't get an image out of my mind that I saw this week with a little girl, her mother beside her on the hospital bed, her legs chopped off. And they said, the doctor said, he could have saved her legs, but there were no antibiotics. No antibiotics. That is horrific because we know there are trucks and trucks full of antibiotics just waiting a few miles away across the border that the Israelis won't let in. And the little girl, when she woke up after the amputation, cried and said to her mother, "Will my legs grow back?" This is what we are witnessing every single day. With the evacuation now out of Gaza City, you must see these images, I'm sure you have, that look like the apocalypse of people trying any way they can to get out of Gaza City. And yet, while this is happening, what is our government doing? At the UN, for the sixth time, it just vetoed a resolution merely calling for a ceasefire. Shame. And in Congress, we have had 14 hearings on anti-Semitism. Not one on Islamophobia, not one on the starvation in Gaza, not one on the mass slaughter, not one on the terrorizing of the Palestinians in the West Bank by the violent settlers, not one. And meantime, more and more billions of our dollars going to Israel. but I want to talk about the good news, because public opinion has changed so dramatically, dramatically in favor of the Palestinians, that it's starting to have a change in Congress. We just saw a greeting from Delia Ramirez, and she introduced a piece of legislation called Block the Bombs. A year ago, we'd be lucky if we got 15 members of Congress to sign legislation saying, stop sending bombs to Israel. We now have 50 members of Congress, 5-0. When Bernie Sanders introduced a resolution to stop sending certain weapons to Israel, the last time he did it, it was 15 senators. This time, it was 27 senators. That is progress. It is too slow. It's agonizingly slow, but it's progress, and it's because of you. The organizing, the mobilizing, the demanding accountability. Code Pink is just one of many groups, many of them Muslim American groups, many of them Palestinian groups, but we are there every single week in Congress. We believe that every single day is a day for demanding accountability. And we ask you to join us if you can any day, even for a few hours, to go with us walking the halls of Congress, pushing for good measures like Block the Bombs, pushing against the bad ones, and telling the members of Congress, you work for us, not for a foreign government. And I want to say that our work is sustained by this organization, by CARE, because we know that whenever a Muslim family is attacked here in the United States, CARE is there. We know when a mosque is vandalized, CARE is there. We know when politicians spread anti-Muslim hate, which is all the time, CARE is there. You are the voice of a proud community that refuses to be silenced. So tonight, let's lift our voices together in a little bit of activism. When I say something you like, you say, stand up, fight back. When CARE and Muslims are under attack, what do? Stand up, fight back. When Palestine is under attack, what do? Stand up, fight back. When free speech is under attack, what do? Free Palestine, thank you so much. I love you all.
That was Medea Benjamin, peace activist, author, and co-founder of Code Pink, speaking at the Council on American Islamic Relations annual banquet. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the U.S. and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.